from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Hello, I'm Julia Child. Welcome to The French Chef and the first show on our series on French cooking. We're going to make bœuf bourguignon, beef stew, and red wine. And it's a wonderful show to begin our series on because it shows you so many useful things about French cooking.
American icon of fine food, cooking, and the freewheeling kitchen, Julia Child, died early today at the ripe old age of 91. She was born Julia Carolyn McWilliams in 1912 in Pasadena, California, to a well-off family that didn't cook. They had a cook. One biographer writes she knew little more than how to boil water when she graduated from Smith College in 1934. During World War II, Julia worked in the agency that became the CIA and was sent to Ceylon, now Sri Lanka. There, she met the love of her life, Paul Child. They married and moved to Paris, and Julia discovered the other love of her life, cooking. She immersed herself and studied at the Cordon Bleu, one of France's premier cooking schools. The young woman who couldn't boil water emerged as a chef. The couple moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and the rest, as they say, is culinary history. In 1961, her best-selling co-authored cookbook, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, came out just as First Lady Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy was turning the country onto continental elegance. In 1963, she began her television career with The French Chef. The audience ate it up. Julia Child became a superstar. Her infectious enthusiasm and marvelously messy ways were just the ingredients to get Americans cooking with abandon. Cookbook sales soared, cooking shows popped up everywhere, more women put on chef's hats, the culture changed, all thanks to Julia. Tonight on Point, we're remembering the kitchen revolutionary, Julia Child. What are your memories of Julia Child? Did she get you hooked on fine food, on watching cooking shows on TV? Do you remember when your kitchen went from meatloaf and minute steak to something more? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me in the studio tonight are two people who knew Julia Child well, professionally and personally. Barbara Haber is a food historian and cookbook author. Her latest book is From Hard Tack to Home Fries, An Uncommon History of American Cooks and Meals. She's the former curator of books at the Schlesinger Library at Harvard, which houses a collection of more than 16,000 cookbooks and food history cookbooks, many of them donated by Julia Child. Barbara Haber, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And with me in the studio, Rebecca Alcid, Director of the Gastronomy and Culinary Arts Program at Boston University. Rebecca, thanks so much to you for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Later in this hour, we'll hear from Julia Child's one-time on-air cooking partner, Jacques Pepin and others, a sad day, and yet it's hard to be sad about Julia Child, Barbara Haber. She just exuded enthusiasm for almost everything she touched, and most of all, of course, in the kitchen.
Absolutely. She's a magical person. When I first met her, I would say in the early 70s, I haven't even toted up how many years ago that was, I was astonished by how similar she was to how she appeared on television. She was someone who was completely genuine, always the same, no front, no persona, just really real. She really was funny. She really was exuberant. She never put on an act. And she was a kind of humble person behind all that fun.
I couldn't agree more. I sat with her a couple of years ago in Cambridge, where, of course, she was a Cantabrigian for many, many years.
Yes.
And even at the great age she was reaching, in that 6'2 frame, she said she started out being interested in being a novelist or a basketball player. When you saw her, you could believe it. But just no affectation. What you saw was what you got.
Exactly. Exactly. Always so real. Wonderful woman.
And yet, Rebecca Alcid, in a way, I don't know if who would have imagined that this would be the woman or the kind of man or woman who would introduce this incredible gusher of culinary insight and enthusiasm to a huge American audience.
I think that with her honesty and kindness and humor, she also had this passion for knowledge and knowledge of food and even politics. And she exuded this wonderful enthusiasm and passion all the time. And when she learned about food and how much she loved it, that's what happened.
At every moment. We want to kind of have Julia Child's spirit with us in the studio tonight. Let's hear more from her. I just can't get enough of that voice, that straightforward enthusiasm for everything she touched.
Just keep moving it around so it won't stick. As soon as you get, as all of it's covered with a little bit of the oil in the pan, then it doesn't stick anymore.
Forget the affectation. Everything is boiling and bubbling there. She just connected with that audience on television, Barbara. She brought her kitchen right into yours, even with the simplest cooking tip.
Incredibly natural, but don't be entirely fooled. Behind it was great training and discipline and a great respect for the tradition, the French tradition of cooking. She had done her homework. I remember when she was working out a bread recipe, I think she had tried it 90 different times with different kinds of flour and different combinations of flour until she got it right.
So this wasn't
everything.
Just happy-go-lucky as casual as she could be.
And on the cuff, sort of. But she worked hard and expected other people who wrote cookbooks to be as precise as she was and as exacting in their directions.
Well, there's the thing. She opened the kitchen door to this new universe for a lot of people. Rebecca Alsage, everyone brings a particular perspective to cooking and to the way they approach it.
Yes.
Julia Child is the one who kind of planted the flag. What was that perspective on food that she most significantly brought to America?
Well, I think that when she first went to France and started to taste French food and enrolled in the Cordon Bleu and then followed through studying with chefs and working at it, that she brought French food to us here in the United States through Mastering the Art of French Cooking and then the TV programs. I always felt that, as Barbara said, she was so disciplined and worked on all these recipes, and they were authentic French recipes. And as the years went on, she started to go into American foods and the way to cook had more foods like that, but always the French techniques were there.
Barbara Haber, describe that kind of culture shift that Julia Child brought, because as we sit here tonight in 2004, it's not as if everyone's out in their kitchen tonight whipping up coq au vin or, you know, I mean, there's still a very diverse cuisine
exactly.
in this country, and it's still far in many, many kitchens from what a great French chef might like to see. On the other hand, the center of gravity in the country is very different than it was in the 1950s before Julia Child began to kind of pump this new information toward her homeland. What's the change? What's the continental divide we passed
right,
over?
Right. I think that every era is complicated and lots of things go on at the same time. In the 50s, you had a lot of emphasis on convenience foods. You had post-war mentality. You had suburban living and women driving kids around and all the rest of having lots of them. And so can openers and frozen food was coming in a very big way. So, again, convenience and fast, you know, preparing meals quickly.
Minute steak, iceberg lettuce, peas from the freezer maybe.
And what about TV dinners? You know, that was the era of that. That
tear
was
the foil
on.
Back and we're ready.
Right, right. But that is not to say that nobody was interested mm-hmm. seriously in food.
Mm-hmm.
We had people who were. But Julia Child came along, and there was this magic between what she knew and how she presented it. The book was doing well, but it wasn't until she hit the television screen that it soared. And so a lot of it had to do with the entertainment value of Julia and the reassurances she could give her audience.
And now, Rebecca Alsid, there are I don't know how many cooking shows on television. When you watch them, do you see the spirit of Julia Child in them, or have they spun off in a thousand different directions?
I think that you see a lot of Julia, but mainly spin-offs of what and who she should be. I think that one thing that was so great about her in front of the TV camera was that she was extremely comfortable, and she was comfortable in front of audiences, which is very difficult. And I think that a lot of these, a lot of the chefs on food programs are comfortable this way. And she introduced that part of food education and cuisine on television.
And that comfort, even against the backdrop of all her study and discipline, communicated right through the books and the television.
She's
a great communicator. You could do this too. Don't be intimidated.
And she was a natural. She was clownish and funny and real. And you just could not take your eyes off of her.
Well,
this big American woman teaching us something kind of exotic and demystifying something that used to scare us.
We've got a lot of callers who already want to join our memory of and celebration of Julia Child tonight. John's calling from New York City. Hi, John. You're on the air. Hello, John. Are you there? We may have lost John. Let's turn to another call. Jennifer is calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. I wanted to call in because when I was a little girl, I would frequently speak to Julia Child, and she would answer my questions as if I was another adult asking about cooking. I was about 5 or 6.
And where would you run into Madame Child?
In the Star Market on Beacon Street in Somerville.
Okay.
My mother shopped at the same grocery store with her, and they shopped the same schedule.
And she took your young question seriously.
Oh, yes. You know, like, you know, rolling out cookies, can I make my own cookie cutters? And she would answer my questions as if I were an adult, and very politely and informatively. So.
And how would you describe her? What's your memory of her?
Oh, very friendly, always interested in what was in the shop, where they got different products from, and asking questions and helping people find things. Very, very friendly. My sister would recognize her and call out her name.
Julia Child.
Ms. Child,
yes, sure. Very good. Jennifer, it's a great memory. Thanks for calling in with it. She said in the introduction to her 7th book, The Way to Cook, Julia Child wrote, "Dining with one's friends and beloved family is certainly one of life's primal and most innocent delights, one that is both soul-satisfying and eternal." She said, "In spite of food fads, fitness programs, and health concerns, we must never lose sight of a beautifully conceived meal." Barbara, that's sort of the heart of it.
That's about pleasure.
Yeah.
And I think the big ingredient about Julia's philosophy of food is that it should be enjoyed. She would light out after a strict nutritionist and food faddists, anybody who would restrict themselves and not eat a certain kind of food, whether we were in the low-fat era or the low-carb era, she would blow the whistle on all that, and that eat sensibly, eat moderately, but eat everything.
And Rebecca, never backing away from butter, never backing away from eggs. I mean, she said use the ingredients that you need to make the food wonderful.
Always, and always in moderation. So I'm sure this was responsible for her long life. She ate everything, but she really didn't overindulge in anything.
Yeah, I love that quote that we heard there at the top from one interview she did, and who knows, she may have been having some fun. But her ultimate meal, red meat and a bottle of gin.
She was a rascal. She was really naughty.
A bottle, not one or two. Well, she was sharing that bottle, no doubt. She stayed on television for such a long time, Barbara. I mean, decades. It's kind of unlikely that any television figure could stay that long. She once said she wanted to be like Alistair Cook. She said, in my case, it might be Alistair Cookie.
Alistair Cookie, yeah. Right from Sesame Street, the Mr. Cookie. I think it was the first show that ran the longest. And what was amazing about it is that it was in prime time. I think some of the later shows were in all Saturday afternoon,
sometimes
when I'm sick with a head cold. I'll stay
home
and
watch. She's still out there in the eternal world
of
television.
And I have watched her old show, not recently, but when it was still being replayed, in combination with all the others. And she was hands down the best. Because she was a natural performer, because you could, she had integrity at the same time, honesty and the casualness, and you could sense the discipline. You know, all of these things that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
People aren't fools. They look at somebody and they can tell if they're the real thing. And boy, she was the real thing.
That was the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time the camera went on, Barbara Haber, Rebecca Altshuler. Stand by. We have to take a short break. We are tonight remembering the late, great Julia Child, that towering personality who brought gourmet cooking into America's kitchens and had a lot of fun doing it. You can join our conversation tonight. What are your memories of Julia Child? Did you know her as a television evangelist for high cuisine, as a friend? Did Julia Child get you hooked on watching cooking on television? Did she get you doing that cooking in your own kitchen? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Julia Child, dead today, just 2 days shy of her 92nd birthday in Santa Barbara, California. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are remembering the late, great Julia Child tonight. She of the kitchen, she who wrote the cookbooks, she who charmed so many millions of Americans over the television into a new realm of food and cuisine. You can join our conversation tonight. What was it that made Julia Child so endearing? Was Julia Child the anti-Martha, the anti-Martha Stewart, not perfect, messy, not prim, but bursting with joy? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. This evening, she is being remembered by friends all over the culinary world, among them Gordon Hammersley, chef and owner of Hammersley's Bistro in Boston.
She always had an amazing influence on me. From the day I began reading her books to when we opened the restaurant, she was a constant source of inspiration, both in terms of her humor, but also in terms of her vigor and her passion about food in general, but French food in particular.
It's what everybody says about Julia Child. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Barbara Haber, food historian and author of From Hard Tack to Home Fries, and by Rebecca Alcid, director of the Gastronomy and Culinary Arts Program at Boston University. We are joined on the phone now from Nantucket, Massachusetts, by Russ Morash. He was producer and director of the French Chef cooking series that started in 1963 and launched Julia Child's career. He worked on other TV specials with Julia Child through the years. Russ Morash, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
You bet, Tom.
Give us a sense of what it was like to work on the set with Julia Child in her television kitchen.
Well, I had the good fortune of being with her for many, many years. And in the early days, of course, we had no idea that she was going to be the legend that she turned out to be. She was an amusing, fun to be around, hardworking, concentrating kind of character with a few eccentricities. And we just hit a ball with her. As we became a little more sophisticated, we realized that she was very intelligent, that she was a master at her craft, that she had an uncanny sense for the audience. She was a great teacher, and she was compassionate. And all of these added up to make her the star that she was. But she was a wonderful character.
Russ, remind us of what the essential ingredients of a Julia Child cooking show were. What was she trying to get across in one show?
Well, a recipe is a series of instructions, you could say, and ingredients. And she wanted to make and sequences. So she wanted to make sure that you were told what sequence was correct. And if there were any techniques involved, she'd stop for a moment and show you the technique of taking bones out of a salmon, I remember, or some such. She'd stop long enough to have you master that, and then she'd go along. I don't know if she ever really believed that people were following along with these recipes. This is well before the age of home videotapes and so forth. As she went further into her career, we did get into videotapes and discs and so forth. And at the same time, there were her books. But she did not think that you were in your living room making these amazing recipes. So
she hoped
that you were getting some of it.
Right. She cooked with abandon and a lot of butter and that amazing voice. Let's listen with us for a moment, Russ.
Now, we have to wait until the butter... it's hot enough, and you can always tell how hot it is by looking at the butter foam. So that's a very easy way of telling. And when it's foaming up like this, it means that it isn't hot enough. And as soon as the foam begins to subside, the butter is hot, and you can then sauté.
Looking at the butter foam with Julia Child. Russ Morash, what about that voice, that accent? How do you place it? It's partly geographic, it's partly class, it's partly... historical, a little twinge of Judy Garland in there along with all the rest, but how do you describe that singular voice?
Well, I remember it well, and when I first intercepted a phone call from her, it wasn't directed to me, but I intercepted it, And it was the first time I'd ever heard this woman's voice, and I said, that's got to be two packs a day. It's got to be possibly incipient asthma in there somewhere. Well, the cigarettes were right. She didn't have any lung disease, however. I don't know. I think it's very high breeding. I think it's Eastern establishment mixed in with a little Pasadena
right.
flake. I don't know. It's a lot of stuff that it made it absolutely perfectly unique. And her accentuation and her dynamic range where nobody's ever tried to come close to, and she could get your attention with it. So
And you mentioned her eccentricities. Those seem easy to imagine, but describe a few for us.
Well, of course, she. One of the things that I do remember, it's actually about her car. She used to drive around in a Volkswagen when they were driven by students.
Yeah.
Julia had one, and she would drive it around Cambridge. And to identify it, she decided she would put an emblem on it that would make it unmistakably hers.
Okay.
It was, in fact, a slotted spoon taped to the radio antenna.
That's mine.
And she never missed it. She did, unfortunately, get into a number of accidents, and so eventually her cars were taken away from her. But I remember once she said, well, this truck that was parked hit me.
It jumped out and grabbed me. And what about that famous kind of, I'm not sure messiness is the right word, but she wasn't upset when things spilled or turned over or rolled away, even on the television show.
Well, my own view of that is that she was a consummate professional in what she did. And she wasn't about cleaning anything up until she had it fully made. And I see that a lot in other trades and craftsmen with really, really gifted professionals, a painter, for example, or a good carpenter. They get all the tools out,
yeah.
make whatever mess is necessary. I have a tendency when I do my pathetic cooking, which isn't very often, to clean everything as soon as I make get it dirty. Not Julia. She'd have the entire acreage laid waste with pots and pans because she needed them. And they would have been the very best pots and pans. The ingredients would have been the very best. But she took no prisoners. If she needed two knives, she'd take three. If she needed three spoons, she'd take four, and so forth.
A great, glorious mess, and miracles
yep.
came out of it. And you were there with her, Russ Morash. Russ, thanks for joining us so much tonight. It's great to have you from Nantucket.
You bet.
Russ Morash, producer and director of the French Chef cooking series, Julia Childs. It started in 1963. Betty is calling from Mountain Lakes, New Jersey. Hi, Betty. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that she was an incredible lady. I had the good fortune to have taken a course from her 2 years ago at King's Cooking School in Short Hill.
2 years ago, she would have been nearly 90.
Yes, and we had to go in very, very early to take numbers to get in because they actually overbooked. And I was so fortunate to be able to sit three chairs from where she was sitting. Nick Malgeri presided over the morning's lesson because she really couldn't have managed that. But her sense of humor was unbelievable. She called. He was putting anchovies in something, sun-dried tomatoes, and
yeah.
she said that in her that wonderful voice of hers, the anchovies. The sun-dried tomatoes are the anchovies of the 90s. Incredible sense of humor. I bought her book that day, and I was also fortunate to have her autograph, and I was very upset that all the other ladies that came, or many of them, brought all their old cookbooks and had this gentle person
right.
autograph them.
You went the full distance with Julia Child.
I was absolutely amazing, and I was always enthusiastic about her, and she really taught me to cook. I'm 68 years old.
Yeah.
She's a few years older than I am. But, boy, she was fantastic.
You and a whole lot of others. Betty, thanks very much for calling in with that memory, not so old, from a woman who kept very active for a long, long time. Joining us now from Dover, New Hampshire, is Marianne Esposito. She's host of the TV cooking show Ciao Italia. She knew Julia Child for 15 years. Julia Child was a guest on her show. Marianne Esposito, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
A sad day in a way. Julia Child has passed on, and she was so active until so recently. Yet it's hard to be sad about this woman, and I guess in a way you're part of a very large family of on-television cooking show hosts who are her progeny.
That's right. We are all the collective students of Julia Child, and I remember as a teenager watching her on television, and, you know, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that I would follow in her footsteps and do basically television cooking, but Julia just stood out as unique, and she was obviously a role model for all of us who are in television cooking, and I really admired her, and I remember the day that she came to the studio to make an omelet, and at that point, you know, she was a bit frail, and she was walking with a cane, I remember, and she came in with her niece and her nephew, and we had a nice stool for her to sit on, and her birthday was coming up in just a few days, so we decided to make her a birthday cake before we did the omelet. So we made her a beautiful birthday cake and sang happy birthday, and she said, now let's get to the omelet. So I basically was doing all of the cooking while she was supervising, and right. I said, now, Julia, what else does this omelet need? And in that very melodious voice, never missing a beat, she said, more bourbon!
More bourbon for the
Which
omelet.
Really just kind of took me by surprise because I never would put bourbon in an omelet. But so, if you're Julia, you can get away with anything.
So she has many who have followed her, but in a way she's nonpareil, sort of one of a kind. I mean, what do you think, what do you see in your generation of TV cooking hosts that comes from her, and what do you think goes with her?
Well, what I see in my generation from her is that she opened the minds of Americans, their palates, to go beyond meatloaf and mashed potatoes. I mean, she was the first one to introduce us to a whole world of cooking. And yes, she was the French chef, but even, you know, eventually, through the years of television, she even ventured into different areas. I remember one day watching her making homemade pasta, and I'm saying, that's not French. But Julia had such a wide repertoire, and I think one of her big contributions was letting us see that there's a whole world of food out there that is very exciting. And I think what she takes with her is that great satisfaction of knowing that she did such a wonderful job and touched so many people's hearts.
Well, Marianne Esposito, one of the many who now follow on her trail, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Marianne Esposito, host of the TV cooking show Ciao Italia. I want to turn now to Connecticut, where we're joined by Jacques Pepin. He's one of America's best-known chefs, cookbook authors, and cooking instructors. In 1999, he shared the kitchen with Julia Child in the PBS series Julia and Jacques Cooking at Home. Jacques Pepin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
I know every microphone in America has been coming your way today to get your reminiscences of Julia Child, but you speak as the French chef who cooked publicly with her. What was her take on French cooking? Did it look like a mainstream French approach, or was it a peculiarly Julia Child approach?
No, it was very serious, actually. I mean, we always joke that we started cooking together, because she started at the Cordon Bleu in Paris in 1949, and I started my apprenticeship in 1949 in France. Of course, I was 13 years old. But she always loved the structure and the discipline and the technique of French cooking, and to her last meal, you know, that's what she liked to cook and discuss. And often people had mentioned that when we did our show, I mean, we did several shows, but we did a series of 24 shows, when we did the series together, she ended up being much more French than I was on the series. And to a certain extent, that was true. You know, she was really sticking to the old principle and technique. So, she was neither French nor a chef, as she said herself. However, she demystified French cooking for the American public, you know, and certainly in the 60s when Mastering the Art of French Cooking came about, people were not that interested in food. But coincidentally, at the time, there was people traveling to Europe, woman liberation, organic gardening, health food store. And she certainly not only was the first one in television as a famous cook, but a female in addition. So it did open the world, you know, and certainly the door to many women who wanted to go into the professional world of cooking, and which they did. That's interesting because at that time, when I was giving cooking classes, there was only women in the kitchen, and now I would give cooking classes, and often there is only men in the in the classes.
Yeah.
So the men have now gone into the home kitchen, which used to be the domain of the woman, and but conversely, women have entered the professional world of cooking, you know, and that's in many ways, you know, thanks to Julia.
Jacques Pepin, when you would go home to France at that time and tell people that you were cooking on air with Julia Child, did the French have any idea that they had this great evangelist over the United States? Did they have any sense of her and her work here?
No idea, and that's why I was so happy that a few years ago she got the Legion of Honor, which is the highest decoration that you can get in France, from the French government. We did that in Boston a few years ago. And she really deserved it because she did a great deal for French cooking. I mean, you know, strangely enough, her show was shown, some of them, in England. Actually, my show was shown in England, too, and no one knows me in France no more than they knew Julia because we are not on television. Of course, the people, the intelligentsia of food, if you want, three-star restaurant, another known chef, may know of her, but by large, the French public would have absolutely no idea.
Well,
more than they have any idea of who I am, too. You know?
The ocean is still wide, as big
right.
as she was here. Jacques Pepin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Jacques Pepin, in 1999, he shared the kitchen with Julia Child in the PBS series Julia and Jacques Cooking at Home. I want to turn to a caller. Larky's calling from Truro, Massachusetts. Hi, Larky. You're on the air.
Hi, Keith. I had two august occasions with Julia Child, one being experiencing her pre-Thanksgiving program about deboning a turkey.
A turkey, and yes, yes.
A turkey, and I actually did it, and my family has been talking about it for 30 years.
Deboning the whole turkey for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
All right.
And my second recollection is working with Dr. Gottlieb at the Special Collections Library at Boston University, and I had the lucky appointment of being his chef for special occasions, and Julia was a surprise guest, and she burst into my kitchen, and she said, "What are you cooking for us?" And I said, "Well, it's this, and apple pie." And she said, "What are you cooking in the apple pie?" And I said, "Lard." And she said, "Oh, I can't wait to taste it." And it was glorious event, and I will never forget it.
So bring on the full lard apple pie, and you've got Julia Child's attention. Thanks for calling in. We are talking tonight about Julia Child, who has passed away today in California at 91, 2 days short of her 92nd birthday. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you remember when your family kitchen went from black and white to color, from minute steak and meatloaf to something more? Does Julia Child get credit for that? I'm in the studio tonight with Barbara Haber and Rebecca Alsid. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are remembering tonight the late, great Julia Child, died early this morning in California. You can join our conversation tonight with all the television cooks out there today. What was it that set Julia Child apart? And in a time of carb counting and a million different diets, does Julia Child remind you just to enjoy your food, to enjoy life? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Barbara Haber, food historian and author of From Hardtack to Home Fries, An Uncommon History of American Cooks and Meals, and by Rebecca Alsid, director of the Gastronomy and Culinary Arts Program at Boston University. Barbara Haber, everybody's got their Julia Child stories. We've heard a few of yours, but we just can never really get enough. Other cooking moments, other times when you sat with her?
Yeah, something came to mind. One cannot help but get into the spirit of this celebration, because that's the tone of this discussion tonight. When she left Boston, we threw a party for her at the Schlesinger Library.
To move out to California just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago. And I thought it would be a good idea to have just the staff. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of young people on the staff who had never met her before. And everyone had a chance to tell her what their jobs were and how they were taking care of her materials, her books, her papers that were in the library.
Her large gifts to the library.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And in my introduction, I have a favorite anecdote. She and Paul would receive Christmas cards but never returned Christmas cards.
Paul Child, her husband.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And instead, they would send Valentines to people.
At Christmas time?
After. No, they would wait an appropriate month or
two. You send the cards, we'll send the love.
And then Valentine would be their preferred holiday, I guess. And one Valentine that I came across in her archives showed both of them in a bathtub, you know, obviously without clothes. They seemed unclothed.
Right.
And the writing on top, they were in Germany at the time. I guess Paul had been stationed there.
In the Foreign Service.
Exactly. And and greetings from downtown Dusseldorf. I think it said, wish you were here. And so I brought that up in my introductory remarks. Yeah. And she suddenly started to laugh. And she said, and my mother always wondered who had taken the picture.
the proper question from the lady who wasn't so worried about that. Oh, that's a great
story.
Catherine's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Catherine. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi,
Rebecca. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
I'm Catherine Van Orman.
From the bookstore.
Jessica's Biscuit.
Absolutely.
Okay, I have a sweet story.
Tell us.
Jacques Pepin corralled Julia. I would never call her that to her face. I called her Mrs. Child.
Very good. But she's a television personality, so millions of Americans called her Julia Child. But anyway, yes.
Corralled us into Rebecca's office. Snagged a bottle of champagne and glasses, and we gossiped.
was it food gossip, Catherine?
Well, we weren't talking about food, but we were talking about the food world, you know, kind of a tight world.
Yeah.
But I won't name names, but it showed her gusto, her discernment.
Whether it was whipping up a meal or just diving into human affairs.
And not a mean word.
That's terrific. Catherine, thank you for the call. Rebecca Alsud, you remember sitting with Julia Child and how she would cast her eye on really everything.
She loved to gossip, but she was never malicious. It was always in fun, and she would not hurt people's feelings ever.
And what about her commentary on people's cooking?
She
didn't like bad cooking and wasn't afraid to say so.
She would tell someone if she didn't really like what was done. In fact, when we'd go out to dinner and we'd be at a restaurant and if she thought something wasn't made properly, she would tell the chef, but she wasn't mean about it, and it would become a learning experience for the chef. And always, whenever we were out, she would go into the restaurant kitchen and greet all the cooks, all the chefs, the dishwashers, everybody. She was just so wonderful to everyone.
Barbara, she was very fastidious, though, about how she used her fame. She wasn't into endorsement. She didn't.
Exactly.
I think she even threatened to sue people who talked about her favorite restaurants and that sort of thing.
Or who used her image or her name in vain. She would acquire a nice little pot of money and then give it away to charity.
Because she wanted to be seen as a sort of upright, independent
voice. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That she wasn't bought out. There had been some scandals in that department. I want to make another point about Julia that I think is so special. Her interest in the young. So many times people of her status jealously guard their situation and are afraid, you know, it's the all about Eve syndrome.
Right.
They don't want anybody taking away
their up on their pedestal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. She was quite the opposite. She was a true mentor. Whether she was talking to kids in cooking school or Harvard undergraduates who were interested in food history, she was enthusiastic, she was supportive, she loved it all, and she wished them well.
And let me ask you this. We've just got a minute left. Mm-hmm. Here we are. She was on air practically, certainly in our culinary mind, for the better part of 40 years, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear her talk about her regrets about where American cuisine had not gone, or her pride on where it had gone, about the state of American cooking and eating?
Well, she didn't like the food police, and she was, you know, the most critical remarks I ever heard had to do with nutrition and nutritionists. And she would make fun of them, you know, quite mercilessly, because they were too restrictive and too bossy. And again, her philosophy was, of course, one must eat moderately, but try everything.
And the joyless, she just couldn't abide.
She could not stand joylessness in life. And she lived for the moment, in the present, really, and didn't look backward and didn't have regrets.
Did she think she'd pulled Americans along to where she thought they might get in terms of what they cooked and ate?
I don't think that she saw herself in these sweeping historic terms.
Mm-hmm.
I never got that feeling.
She got out there and cooked and spilled and laughed and cooked some more.
And in fact, I heard her say that she had to work hard because she was quite sure if she didn't that people would forget about her within 3 months. So she took nothing for granted and believed that she had to work for her status.
Well, I have a sense it's going to...
I think she was wrong.
I think
you?
She's a bit wrong there. I think that fame and that affection is going to last quite a lot longer than 3 months. It's been great talking with both of you tonight. Rebecca Alcid from BU, thanks so much for being
thank
with us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been terrific. And Barbara Haber, thanks so much for coming
in
tonight.
Thank you.
Just terrific having you. Listeners, you can continue this conversation on our website. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. Let's close our tribute tonight with Julia Child and her signature sign-off. This is On Point.
This is Julia Child. Welcome to the French Chef, and see you next time. Bon appétit.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
Yes, I would have voted for the authority I believe is the right authority for a president to have. But I would have used that authority, as I have said throughout this campaign, effectively. I would have done this very differently from the way President Bush has.
Almost 2 years after he voted for the war in Iraq, and almost 220 days after switching positions to declare himself the anti-war candidate, my opponent has found a new nuance. He now agrees it was the right decision to go into Iraq.
The operations are still continuing in this city and will continue to take place until these militias evacuate the Holy Shrine.
At a point in every person's life, one has to look deeply into the mirror of one's soul and decide one's unique truth in the world, not as we may want to see it or hope to see it, but as it is. And so my truth is that I am a gay American.
I am proud of those 4,000 couples, and my heart is heavy because today, based upon the Supreme Court's determination decisions, their relationships, as it relates to their status as a married couple, have been invalidated.
I'm pleased to announce my decision to nominate Congressman Porter Goss as the next director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
I've always wanted to do something where I could be a commentator, as I call it, a Mrs. Alistair Cookie.
United States of America!
And there's a week. Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry says he stands by his vote to authorize war with Iraq, inviting derision from his opponent, President Bush. U.S. forces launch a major offensive in Najaf against Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's militia. Today has seen a ceasefire to allow negotiations between Sadr and the Iraqi government. Governor James McCreevy of New Jersey announces that he is gay and that he is resigning from office. San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom speaks after California's highest court nullified thousands of gay marriages performed in San Francisco. Florida Representative Porter Goss is nominated to head up the CIA. Legendary chef Julia Child passes away at age 91. And sounds of the Olympic opening ceremony in Greece today as the United States team is introduced. Jack Beatty, there it is, from Julia Child's New Kitchen in the Sky to Olympic Fields and Iraq.
In Iraq, and just as we are going on the air, we hear that the offensive around Najaf has been halted. As you were discussing on the program last night, this was a battle that even if we won, we were probably going to lose because of the effect on Iraqi opinion, and not only Iraqi opinion, but in the greater Middle East, of any damage to the shrine there, to the mosque. But the trouble with these putting on the brakes business is that it's hell on morale. I mean, you get these soldiers fired up to fight, and then you say, whoop, we got to stop now. And each time, and the soldiers point this out, last April when they put on the brakes, in the interim, the Mahdi Army got stronger, got better weapons, were ready to kill more of us the next time. And they're just terribly afraid it's going to happen again. You know, for decades now, conservatives have been saying, don't use forces for political reasons. If you put forces in war, they've got to win. Well, just as in Vietnam, so here, we're just using our forces to send signals and to feints and moves and so on, doing everything that is ruinous to the morale of fighting men.
The word in Najaf this week from the U.S. military, as it was in Fallujah a few months ago, was we will crush resistance here, and now holding back. It may be the wise thing to do, but as you say, it no doubt grinds on morale. And there was a lot of moaning from some conservative quarters in the States after the pullout in Fallujah. But then, of course, if you go ahead, you may have a firestorm on the other side.
Well, that's right. And all of this, of course, is previewed what's going to happen when people start focusing on the election and when the Constitution comes up for vote, because
this is Iraq's January election.
Iraq's January election, because the issue there is, will the Kurds remain part of Iraq or will they not? And the Shia, if the Shia see that they are going to have, you know, extraordinary autonomy, this could be civil war revisited with all the groups. And then what do we do?
Well, much still to be settled, much clearly that has never been fully settled in Iraq, and now it is in no small part America's problem. Lots of talk about Iraq on the stump this week. You know, we started the week looking at John Kerry's statement that he would authorize that war again, even knowing what he knows now. Of course, President Bush has an interesting position, too. Knowing what he knows now, he would still go to war. That's even a further step. Though you heard him there in our tape just now, he characterized John Kerry as having said that he would still go to war. It's not what Kerry said.
Yes, but there's a nuance there, isn't there?
That's the nuance business.
And you know, that's a French word, wouldn't you know?
Oh, dear.
And speaking of words, John Kerry used the word sensitive recently, as in we've got to be sensitive in dealing with our allies in the war on terror. Mr. Bush had said the same thing in March. Dick Cheney picked it up, ripped it out of context, and said, we're not going to win this war against terrorism by being sensitive to the terrorists. I mean, he is becoming Spiro Agnew revisited.
It's funny, there is real asymmetry, at least as a way to make the headlines, between John Edwards and Dick Cheney here. John Edwards, really not that much of an attack running mate, at least to this point.
No, he hasn't cottoned to it. You only get headlines if you say stuff like this. And by the way, even CNN, which is, of course, bland to the point of toothlessness, actually showed Bush saying the very same things in March. So this didn't get by the, quote, media. No, there is that asymmetry, and we'll have to see whether Edwards gets a little tougher. Maybe their whole tactic is, he's going to be nice, but, you know, that may not be what wins in these campaigns.
Well, we are into the season of clashing headlines and charging counter-charge. Whether Americans go for the tougher-looking profile or something else is an interesting question here.
It is, and also interesting is how the decisive Americans, the undecided voters, are coming down. A recent poll shows all registered voters, 49% approve of Bush, but among the undecided, only 25%. That's not good news for Mr. Bush.
Well, much more on that to come. Jack, thanks for being with us tonight. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Jane Manners, Tamar Morad, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Ann Stevenson and Cora Peterson. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.